From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Weird Night Stories. Our condolences to the family of past Coast to Coast guest Ellen Whitehurst. She has died, author of Make This Your Lucky Day. Wonderful human has joined the hereafter. Sorry to hear that. Far too many passing on. Here's what's happening. Smoking apparently leaves an archaeological record of hundreds of DNA mutations that it causes, according to scientists. Having sequenced thousands of tumor genomes, they found a 20-cigarette-a-day smoker would rack up an average of 150 mutations in every lung cell each year. The changes are permanent and persist even if someone gives up smoking. Stop smoking. The FBI is warning companies to protect themselves from cyber attacks from a newly released malware that has disrupted a large segment of the internet in the United States. Happened last month. The distributed denial of service attack on the internet company Dyn revealed new vulnerabilities to cyber attackers throughout interconnected devices known as the Internet of Things. FBI Director James Comey was driven in part by a fear of leaks from within his own agency when he decided to tell Congress the FBI was investigating newly discovered emails related to Hillary Clinton. The examination of the email traffic is now being carried out under the tightest secrecy by a team at the FBI headquarters in Washington. My sources tell me that they are really looking deeply into the Clinton Foundation. Lauren Weinstein, by the way, is an expert on technology for us, and I wanted to bring him in to talk about the apparent hacking of her servers. Lauren, how did they find the servers at the State Department? How does that happen?
You know, it's not even clear that State Department servers have ever even been involved. I mean, what we're facing now is that most of the information we're getting at this point about this whole story is via leaks. You were talking about security of the FBI. The FBI is leaking like a sieve right now. And that's not the way the FBI is supposed to operate. You have different factions who are apparently selectively leaking information. They're investigating their own Twitter account now. I mean, it's bizarre. And in the end, they're going to be the real losers. There's another aspect about this that isn't discussed enough. The classification system in this country is a mess. It's been that way for decades. It's not just the FBI or NSA, State Department. The agencies fight with each other over what is classified, what isn't classified. They retroactively classify materials, sometimes that have already been published in newspapers or elsewhere in the public domain. They can't agree if something that's been published should be classified or not. Someone will send an email thinking it's unclassified in one agency, and they're correct, but another agency later says it should be classified.
Yeah.
And really, when you come down to it, the way you're supposed to determine whether or not something is classified is it's always, I mean, if you've ever seen classified material that's been declassified, there's stamps on them, marks on them. They'll say secret, top secret, no foreign, things like that. They don't use funny little marks. It's always completely obvious. So when we find ourselves arguing over what's classified, what's not, what was mailed where, part of the reason for this is that no one's ever wanted to bite the bullet and fix the classification system in the first place, so we're all vulnerable to these leaks and these stories and all of this now. And you know, it's small wonder that everybody's turning off on this, because we can't even understand what's going on.
No, you're right. It's one of the most confusing stories I've ever seen. Lauren, check in with us a little later, okay?
Okay.
Lauren Weinstein. In a moment, Bev Harris joins us from Black Box Voting. We're going to talk about the possibility of hacking the election this year. The FBI's October surprise appears to have improved Donald Trump's overall standing in the electoral map, with the latest Fox News electoral scorecard showing several states shifting in his favor since last week. I'm predicting a very close race. Regardless of the outcome, about half of the Americans who voted aren't going to be happy. And as a matter of fact, it's at this time that unhappiness is bigger and deeper than I've ever seen or felt before. I thought we'd bring in our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, for a moment. We talked with him about this a week ago, but it's, Peter, it seems to be getting worse. I mean, people are getting really mad about the other side. How are we going to heal this?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, you don't bet your happiness on the outcome of an election.
No.
You know, there's one thing about America, and that is it is a wonderful place. And whatever happens in that election, I think we should all wake up and say, wow, I'm an American. I'm glad to be an American. I wrote a little book with that title, George, Wow, I'm an American. I think it's just a perfect thing to wake up with in the morning. And I have my own thoughts about it, too. You know, America is not, despite this election, it's not about class warfare. Not about gender warfare. It's not about religious conflict. It's not about racial conflict. America's about being an individual. Wake up after the election being the individual you want to be. If you're feeling like you got really messed up by who got elected, then get back to being a person who takes charge, takes responsibility, and makes your own sphere a better place to be. Don't bet your life on the Don't bet your happiness on this election. You know, bet it on yourself as an individual.
And in this particular case, Peter, because people are so upset about everything, why are they tense? It's not just the election. There's something else going on. People are really uptight. How come?
Well, I think the country's going in really different value directions right now, and I think that's a real issue. We're getting very far away from having a solid shared value system. And that's why I want to come back to being an individual, because the individual is being crushed everywhere, and yet the individual is what the basis of this country has always been. It hasn't been about all this other stuff we talk about. It's not about political correctness. It's not even about being nice, although being nice is wonderful. It's about living a productive individual life. And I think that's gotten lost. And people are blaming their failure to be an individual on this, or they're blaming it on that. And it's time to get back to making the country a place for individuals to grow and to thrive. That's what it's been about. And I'm not hearing anybody really coming out and using that word individual enough in this election. And, you know, wake up being an individual and you'll be okay. You'll have a life. You'll make a life.
I'm glad we have you on staff as our resident psychiatrist, Peter, and we don't even have to pay you with our insurance.
Glad to be here.
Thanks, Dr. Peter Breggin. Well, a South Florida mother was having a baby, so she rushed to the hospital. She didn't get there on time. She had the baby in the hospital parking lot. A few months later, she opens up her mail, and she has a $7,000 delivery bill from the hospital. When she had the baby in a car in the parking lot. Go figure. In a moment, Bev Harris joins us. Black box voting. We're going to be talking about the possibility of tampering and what it all means for the next couple hours with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Bev Harris, founder of blackboxvoting.org, an investigative reporting and public education organization that she founded back in 2003. Her work exposes problems with electronic voting, and here she is on Coast to Coast during one of the most tumultuous presidential years I have ever seen. Bev, how about you?
There's about an apt description. It's a wild ride this year.
Oh, my gosh. Don't fall out of the roller coaster.
Really?
My gosh.
You know, it's also very interesting from the standpoint of the work I do, because for the first time, you know, it was taboo for so long for the mainstream media to ever even broach the subject of tampering with results. And that was kind of forced into the media by Donald Trump. So now I've been watching them totally get the story wrong.
They are getting it wrong, aren't they?
Wrong. I mean, I don't know if that's because they want to get it wrong or because they just are listening to the wrong people.
Yeah.
I just feel like, well, if you're going to talk, it's like they're all heading completely in the wrong direction. I like to straighten them out whenever they call me. So Well,
let's get it right, just to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about right here in terms of tampering and hacking. The floor is yours, Bev.
Yeah. Well, there's a few things. One is, it's not the Russians that we need to worry about. It's like what Pogo said, we have seen the enemy and he is us. It is the insiders and the people. You know, it's insiders. It's always been insiders. In fact, even some of these email leaks that they keep saying are the Russians are probably insiders leaking their emails. When the great fellow that you had earlier was talking about there's lots of leaks. Listen, a few years back, before WikiLeaks existed, I got a leak of 30,000 emails that were the Diebold Electronic Voting System programmer emails. And I ultimately was able to determine that was an inside leak. Nobody hacked it. It was a guy who had a chip on his shoulder, you know, who thought he'd just get something out there. But so with elections, it's the same thing. It's, you know, the remedies are probably the same, mm-hmm. whether it's the Russians or whether it's an insider. But in our history, it's typically been somebody who has inside access who does something.
Now, in the old days, the tampering would be dead people voting and things like that. Very non-technical, not a lot of people, maybe enough to make a difference in a community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I'm glad you bring that up, because that's another thing. Sort of the impression the mainstream media gives is that this is all about a presidential election, whereas actually election tampering, vote tampering, bubbles up from the local level. Historically, it has developed from the local level, and even the electronic tampering using the computerized voting systems, some of the stuff is kind of built in there to tamper, by the way, but it seems to be built in there to tamper the local stuff. They have sort of a network of kind of local and regional fixers. They're these contract jobbers that work out of their home, and they help with the election because a lot of times the local county really doesn't have the expertise to run their own system, and they don't, you know, you can't employ a staff for something that happens once a year. You can't employ a full-time computer guy necessarily. So they contract it out, and there's this network, and they've been there for like 20 years, some of these guys, working out of their basement, you know, it's like, call Bill, and he does your elections. people don't know about these. I didn't know about them until a couple of years ago. And it's kind of one of my missions now is to start identifying some of these people. But, you know, so there's these kind of local contract jobbers that nobody knows too much about. They're never named, and they're given a contract, and they get a couple $1,000 a day, sometimes a great deal more than that. And they have inside access. So that's where, you know, they are really truly high risk. I consider them to be, because we don't know who they are, and they have total access to the system. We found one guy that had access and was programming 11 out of the 15 counties in Arizona. I mean, there's some access. That guy could control a state all by himself out of his basement. So that's part of it. It's insiders. It's not so much outsiders. It's also, they keep focusing our attention on the voting machines out in the precincts. Actually, the risk area, there is one master computer that basically determines what is sent into those machines when they're first programmed. And also, at the end of the night, they have to send their votes somewhere, right?
That's right.
I mean, now, if you're going to tamper with a system, are you going to run around to 5,000 different machines, or are you going to sit there and wait for the votes to come to you in one master machine?
You wait for the big one.
Of course. And so it's the master tabulator. They sometimes call it the central tabulator, the central server, you know, the master computer. But that's the one where all the votes come at the end of the night. And guess where the official results come out of? That one.
Yeah. Now, how do the hackers know where those pieces of equipment might be to tap into?
Well, again, because it's insiders, not outsiders, typically, these people are given the access to the system.
Are they paid off? Do they have a vendetta? What's going on?
You know, because this stuff kind of developed from local and regional stuff, it has to do with money. Think about this now. There's one presidential election every 4 years, but there's 100,000 local elections every single year. And these 100,000 elections for local stuff control hundreds of billions of dollars in contract allocations. So it'll be like somebody wants to build a stadium, and there's a bond issue on there, and there's a developer in the background that wants to get his mitts on that contract, and there's water rights and mining rights, and some guy wants to develop a bunch of beachfront condos, and he needs some zoning.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where it actually bubbles up from in the very beginning. Now, if you're going to run a presidential election, one meaning of a good ground game could be that you know where to access some of these local fixers. But they're basically in place to deal with local issues of basically awarding contracts.
All right. So in this case, in this presidential election, this fear of tampering and hacking,
yeah.
if do you think it's going to be done?
Yeah.
You do. Big, on a massive scale, or
I think
small?
It's going to be a patchwork scale. It's going to be, because not every place is open for business. I mean, a person would be rather foolish to try to tamper with Humboldt County, California.
Sure. Well, is it going to be done to sway votes to one candidate or the other? Or is it being done to destroy the election process?
No, to sway votes.
Okay.
And when you think about it, because of the Electoral College, you don't have to go in and get them all. You just have to get a couple of swing counties.
That's
in the
right.
State. If you can pick up Cleveland and
Detroit,
Columbus,
and Chicago.
Yeah, you get those. You got the state, so you know, why would you run all over the place once again? And so it actually is rather feasible. Now, it's not going to be just one person. But if you know you're in the political system, Cleveland, oh my goodness, that place, Cuyahoga County Democratic Party, for example, their head guy got indicted. Cuyahoga County Republican guy got in trouble too. You know, it's a county with a great history of corruption and political party corruption. Well, if you have done politics in that state, you're going to kind of know who to access and who to do your work for you. And so that's what I mean by good ground game. And that's why I think that the risk of who would be, who the tampering would be on behalf of, who it would benefit, would tend to favor somebody who's more of an establishment candidate.
So in this particular case, the people who are going to do the tampering, are they pro-Hillary? Are they pro-Donald? Who are they? Or both.
Certainly pro-Hillary would be inclined that direction. But also, you know, in this election, it's not out of the question that there would be certain factions in the Republican Party that wouldn't mind getting Hillary in because they can't really control Trump as well. And they get Hillary in and then get her out of the way with an indictment.
Well, that's possible.
That's
very possible.
These kinds of things. So, I mean, politics is a very, it's quite a chess match, you know.
You know what's interesting, though, Bev, throughout all this, I tried to do a lot of analysis today, looking at what could happen if Hillary got elected, then indicted, and then Tim Kaine becomes president, what happens if Donald Trump gets elected?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he won't get indicted, but what happens with his kind of presidency? And I'm trying to weigh the possibilities of these two. And the bottom line for me, this country is going to make it. Regardless of who gets elected and regardless of what happens to the individual that gets elected, this is a strong country. And as much as people put us down, we're going to succeed. We're going to get through this.
Yeah, and you know when they say it's going to be a constitutional crisis? No, it's not. We've actually been through this before. If she does get indicted, there's not going to be a constitutional crisis. We already have procedures in place to deal with it, and we've done it before. Remember Nixon? You know, we just put his vice president in, and off we go. So, and I really enjoyed the guest that you had, the psychiatrist.
Yeah, he's good.
Nailed it when he said, you wake up the next morning and you do you be your own individual. That's exactly right. And you know what? That's how we solve the issues with problems with the vote counting system and so forth. Again, it's as individuals we go out and we do something that makes a difference to get the thing back on track. We don't sit there and wring our hands and say our country's in big, big trouble. It doesn't do anything. In fact, it's pretty much always, you know, one or two people in any small group that do all the work anyway, so might as well be us, right?
Yeah, all right, Beb. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to continue talking about tampering. We're going to take calls as well. Bev Harris with us for the next hour and a half as we talk about all these things that you've been hearing and reading about. Welcome back to Coast. Bev Harris with us as we talk about the possibility of tampering during this election, of course. Bev, where would the tamperer be? Could he be any place on the planet as long as they're part of the internet?
That's one way to do it. There's actually three different possibilities that are pretty viable.
And we're not giving away any trade secrets here,
nope,
are we?
Nope, okay. Nope. And I wouldn't be me if I didn't try to scare the pants off of you, because we actually have found some stuff that's pretty bad.
All right.
But, you know, it can be done remotely. And again, I talked about inside access. One of the things that we're discovering, I have a video that's on YouTube right now. If you go there and you just put in the words fraction magic, it'll take you there. Or if you go to blackboxvoting.org, you'll see it.
All right.
And I have in it, I have some taped testimony that's in a sworn deposition where they're talking about a vendor, using remote desktop access to go into their central tabulator during a live election and run scripts on their database. Running scripts on a database is about the worst thing you can do. It simply means it can go in there and shuffle all the numbers around, basically, in a very precise way. So that's one way, is remote. But remember, it's not necessarily some Russian hacker. It could be, and is more likely to be actually, a guy who was given access because he's a technician who's supposedly helping him with a problem, and they give him remote desktop access. Remote desktop access, you actually go in and take over the other person's computer. Another way, though, that I think is a very plausible way to do it, sometimes they say, well, don't worry, it's not connected to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? They have to get the results off of it somehow, right? So they say, don't worry, what we do is we put in a little USB stick, a little thumb drive, and we take the results from that computer to a different computer to put it on the internet. Well, the very act of putting in a thumb drive that has a script on it will change the results before you take them to the next computer. So it can actually be the putting in of the thing that's keeping it off the internet that will be changing the results. And for that reason, one of the things I recommend is for citizens who are watching this process is to even bring in, you know, brand new thumb drives still in the package from Office Depot or something, and say, why don't you use this one instead of the one you just pulled out of your back pocket?
Bev, are we too technologically advanced for this? I mean, should we go back to the old punch cards?
Well, the old paper belts. Actually, there's some very interesting new technology ideas that could make it sort of the best of all worlds. If you have paper ballots that you fill in with a pen and paper, and you put them through a scanner, the high-speed scanners they use now, these new voting machines, they take a picture of every ballot.
That's right.
Ballots are anonymous. They don't have any name on it. They take a picture of every ballot. And guess what? That's an electronic file that everybody could have. We could literally, right now, doing no new technology, put all the ballots on the web on election night, and everybody could do their own recount of any race they want. They could check for anything they want. And that, I think, ultimately is one of the directions we really should be looking at going. There are public records. The law is already in place to enable it under freedom of information. They are anonymous. Now, it is true that you can also alter, you can alter any electronic record. But so here's part two. You peg it together with the real paper ballot by simply printing a number on it, just a serial number, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, that's unique for each one. And, of course, when you take a picture of the ballot, that same number is going to be on it, so that you can go and look at the real ballot And with the same serial number, and it better match.
I was dealing with a vendor a couple days ago, and they needed a scanned copy of my driver's license.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't have a scanner here. I'll go to the office later. I'll Xerox it, and I'll fax it to you or something like that. They said, no, just take a picture of it with your phone and send it to me.
Right.
And it was done just like that.
Right, and guess what? These new voting machine optical scanners, they automatically take these pictures, and they are sitting right on the machine in a file. So this is something that people are doing all over America this election. It's the first time ever. We have people all over the place, not me, I'm not organizing it, but just people all over the place that have learned this and are just going in and saying, I would like all of these ballot images, please. They're called a ballot image because they're a picture of a ballot. And it's not like you just get your own. You get the whole bunch of them. If you have a county with 170,000 votes, they can give you 170,000 ballot images on one USB stick. Might take two, you know. So it's very interesting, though, what's happening as people have done this. In Arizona, there's a gentleman by the name of John Brakey doing phenomenal work. He lives in Tucson. He asked for his ballot images, and they got a little bit sweaty and then said, well, we destroy those every day.
Huh.
Okay.
Gone.
Why? That's very much,
why?
By the way, like if you have the local county treasurer who's supposed to be writing checks and she says she destroys her financial records every day. I mean, why? So then he got a judge to issue a temporary restraining order to prevent them from destroying them for this coming election next week. And then they decided that they would disable the feature.
Unbelievable.
But I think this is actually... it's tightening the noose on the ones that are doing something they shouldn't. But I think it's very, very promising because it means there's actually something simple we can do. And let's say that the election on Tuesday turns out to be very controversial.
Well, and what's that definition? What will determine that it's controversial?
Oh, that... Well, that there are that are results that just don't look right, or that are for whatever reason people feel are questionable. Okay.
Okay. I mean, here's an example.
Yeah.
On a state that should go to one of the candidates easily,
mm-hmm.
over the historically and because of the polls, mm-hmm. but it's not. Let's say it goes to the other candidate. Will they suspect that?
That can be, but I'll tell you some other signs of it. Sometimes you will see, this happens, you see votes come in, and a guy may have, let's say, 8,000 votes, and then more precincts come in, and he has 6,000 votes. Now, how does that happen?
How did he lose 2,000
exactly.
and more
so
came in?
Those kinds of things can create suspicion.
All right.
And sometimes when it's very, very late, you know, they just have one county, Key County, and
mm-hmm.
the results just don't come in until like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then they say it was struck by lightning. I mean, any time results are delayed, it is cause for concern. Let me just put it that way, because these new systems are very, very fast. So there can be different things. But what's really exciting about this election is that if there are results in any particular place that people are kind of worried about for whatever reason, they can simply go and immediately say, I would like a copy of all of the ballot images. Show me the pictures of all of the ballots. I want them on a USB stick.
Yeah.
Take them home and look at them at my own leisure. I think there will be resistance to that, and public officials are already behaving in some sort of strange way. Some of them are giving them right over. A fellow asked for them in Georgia this week, and the state officials there just sort of played dumb. They're like, oh, well, do you want this? And they kept pointing him at things that were not related. And so I finally published on my website, kind of just for him, okay, here is exactly what we, you know, what it is, and here's where to find it, and this is the menu you go to. But so sometimes they just aren't really very cooperative. Sometimes they may try to delay people to run out the clock, because remember, elections, you can run out the clock. You got 10 days to do a recount, and X number
mm-hmm.
of days to do a contest, and then it's done. So if they just don't give you the stuff until it's too late, that's one thing they might do. But all of these things are still very, very promising, because before, 10 years ago, you know, when we just had these touch screens with no paper, we just couldn't do anything. We would get these weird results, and we would just say, well, that's really weird. And we couldn't do anything.
I miss the old days when they put the election results up on a board. With numbers like the old baseball days.
It was so exciting.
Six, two.
I hate it now when they just say, they call these races.
The minute a poll closes in that state, call it.
They haven't even counted any votes at all.
Yeah.
You know, or sometimes they've counted just the absentees or just a portion of the absentees. It's wrong. I mean, give us at least the actual count instead of your guess as to what the count is going to be. I really, really object to that.
What's the worst thing that you think could happen during this election?
Oh, well, I think the worst thing would be that the totals would be altered in a subtle enough way that we wouldn't know it. That really would be the worst way.
So how will we know?
Yeah, I mean, the Fraction Magic Report, the video that we have up now, it is an extraordinarily dangerous exploit because it mimics reality so closely that it's just shaving very, very precisely so that it's going to, you know, it's going to kind of match the demographics you'd expect. And that's why we're really encouraging people to, you know, ask for those ballot images and start doing some checks. And I think that, you know, in the past, here's what they've done. They've said, well, we'll have a special group of auditors or we will have our canvassing board. I think we're past that now. There's been enough dodgy, sketchy things happen.
Right.
That let all Americans see what the evidence is. Just let us see. The technology's there. It doesn't cost anything. Just let us see.
Are we at a point, Bev, that regardless of who wins, the other side is going to protest over the results?
Yeah, probably. This particular election is kind of that kind of an election.
And will we have the voter, the person who voted for their candidate, who does not win, are they going to suspect the other candidate stole the election?
Probably.
Yeah.
But that's why, and actually I've been saying for a while, sooner or later this was going to happen. Because when you have mystery elections that nobody can tell what, you know, look, you got to come up with the evidence to show folks. You have to be able to let everybody see the ballots if they want to see all the ballots. You have to. You used to. They used to do these hand-counted paper ballots at the precinct. Everybody could see it. That's why it wasn't so controversial. What do they expect when they say you can never see what we did behind closed doors, but you must have confidence? That is very, very odd approach, and it's not democratic at all. It is going to happen, if not now, then later, where there is some sort of a perfect storm, and there becomes something very destabilizing. If we don't stop doing mystery elections, I mean, I'm just so done with this. You know, I know nobody likes accountability, right? Nobody says, hey, I'd like to have some accountability today with my breakfast. But the thing is, there has to be accountability, and there's a difference between saying you have to be confident and saying you have to be accountable. We have to have accountability. We have to be able to see how they arrived at their numbers. And I think if that happens, even if people don't like the result, they're going to be able to accept the result. I'm not sure we should be telling people to accept the result if they're unable to ever verify it.
Gosh, then you're going to have 4 years of uncertainty? 4 years of questioning?
Well, that's why they need to let loose with these ballot images and let everybody see them.
Would you prefer that the election be a landslide as opposed to being really close?
No. It doesn't really matter because with tampering electronically, you can tamper a landslide just as easily as you can tamper a close election. I mean, you can actually set the number. You say, you can actually go so far as to say, I would like my candidate to get 49.1234678%.
And they'll do it.
That's what it'll deliver.
My.
So you can put anything you want in there. I think we're really at the point now where we are wise to be skeptical about results where we can't see how the machine arrived at it. And if we can see, which we have the technology to see now, if we can see all those ballot images, and they all have a number, and if we feel like it, we can go down and look at the paper ballots and match them up and see that they didn't even adjust the image, I think that starts to get us where we need to go.
Sure, but that's a little
late. There's
already
someplace that does this, by the way. Humboldt County, California has been doing this for 8 years.
Yeah, they have, but it's too late to do it for the country right now, isn't it?
No, it's not.
It's not?
No, and I'll tell you why. All the machines already make these things. They're in the machines. The law already exists under freedom of information law. So it actually is not. Anybody can ask for these things. Every person can ask for these things.
Now, we do know that the Russians do hack. They've done it in the Ukraine, and they've done it on other things. So they do that. How do we know that we're not going to get hit by 16 different places to try to hack?
Well, and this, again, I'm going to go back to the same thing. If the Russians hack it, and we can see all the ballot images, of the photos of the ballots people have actually cast, then I guess we're going to know right away, and we're going to know what the result should have been. So, problem solved.
But they can actually get in. You're convinced that anybody that knows how to do this can get into the election servers and change the outcome?
I've done it myself. As a demo, and that's what this Fraction Magic demo that we have there is. I would not even write that story until I could see for myself, you know, and he hands over the thing and says, here, do some of your own, and I pulled out some elections that I had gotten, election databases I had gotten in litigation and so forth, and I blew through the entire state of Alaska in 4 seconds and was able to change every single vote in the state of Alaska in
no.
the presidential database.
And how long
and
would
I'm not a computer person, so I know that it's possible.
And without them having the ability or checking it with these scanned records,
right.
How would they know that something happened?
They wouldn't. And another thing that I have linked on my website is a film called Hacking Democracy. That was very interesting because the filmmakers actually had the election official in the room when the alteration of the votes took place. It was a demonstration, of course. And he said, and he was a very good election official, very highly respected, and he said, you know, if I hadn't known better, I would have certified this election. You can't tell even if you're standing in the room. It is an invisible process. And I actually think it's quite unfair to election officials to say you guys have to sign off and certify this stuff because they don't know if it's correct or not. They have no way of knowing whether that is a correct count.
Are the candidates secretly hoping somebody hacks for their benefit?
Well, I don't think that it would be secretly hoping. I think that the way it works is if they pay a fixer to take care of the job for them. I mean, it's interesting when you look at some of these middlemen that are out there.
This has got to be at a level where the candidates don't even know what's going on.
Probably.
Somebody else is doing this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, make sure that, you know, deliver me this county. And, of course, that's kind of ambiguous.
Yeah, somebody take care of this problem for me.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly right. You know, you got to make it happen there. That's kind of ambiguous, right?
And then they walk out of the room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not, well, and here's another reason for that. If an election was manipulated and it gets caught and the candidate did not know, they don't remove the candidate from office and can't prosecute them.
Right. And I'm not sure the candidate would know.
Of course not.
You know, it would be one of those scenarios. Just, you know,
yeah.
I'm running and take care of things.
And I don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, Beth, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls. Some of you have been on hold. We'll get to you as well as we talk with Bev Harris, Black Box Voting. Her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What an amazing story. You know, we don't really deal with the political spectrum on this show. You know that. But this is an election year, and it is a most unusual election year. And somebody's got to talk about this. We do.